Happy Election Day from the Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. It's always a big day. We always love election days around here. I'm Bill Nigut, joined by a couple of my journalistic colleagues for today's special Election Day edition of Rewind. Of course, Jim Galloway. We couldn't do an Election Day show without you.
It's kind of like, what is it, Thanksgiving. It kind of ushers in the holiday season that extends all the way to November.
Yeah, but you know what, Tamar Hallerman, also of AJC's Washington Bureau, there's no dishes to clean up after Election Day. It's not
Hallelujah.
Thanksgiving in that sense.
Hallelujah.
Okay. So we have Tamar Hallerman, who you hear coming to us from the Washington Bureau, where she works. For the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Galloway, of course, is the lead political writer for the AJC. Also joining us on this election day, Ed Lindsay. Ed is a former Republican state legislator, represented Buckhead for how many years?
10 years.
10 years, and he is now he's now working at Denton's, the world's largest law firm, and we should congratulate you. You just got a big promotion.
Yeah. I'm now the head of their public policy team.
All right. And Michael Owens, the Democratic chairman of the Cobb County Democratic Party. Thanks for being here as well, Michael.
Thank you. Always happy to be here, Paul.
All right. So we've got a lot to talk about. From everything we're hearing, turnout is not particularly strong, which isn't surprising. Before we bring the panel in, we asked our producer, Olivia Rheingold, if she would go get some interviews with voters. Olivia, first of all, tell us where you were and tell us, was it crowded? Was it empty? What was it like?
Hi. So
hi.
Hello. So I was in the heart of Buckhead. I was at Trinity Presbyterian Church off of Howell Mill. And turnout fluctuated. I'd say that around 10 a.m., there was a steady flow, but then it really started to pour. And after that, it didn't really recover.
Okay, let's do this. Let's listen to the people you talked with, and then we'll bring the panel in, too. I think there are some things you learned that are pretty interesting. Let's hear it.
Today, I voted for Hunter Hill. One thing that's kind of frustrating is you're basically voting for incumbents. I wanted to vote for people who have not necessarily been in office. I think people can hold office for way too long, so I think term limits are really important. I think gun control is important. That's definitely in the news, especially having young kids myself. That's a big concern.
Okay, the issues that matter is government waste, unnecessary spending, incumbents getting in there and not doing what they said they were going to do, and then they just get name recognition and stay in there. And raising taxes, just there's no incentive for them to cut spending.
Education is really big. I have two kids in Atlantic Public Schools. Housing, those are my biggest issues. I was leaning towards Evans, but then I was looking at Morning Joe this morning, and they were saying some things about Evans, and I'm not really going to know until I go in.
So I voted for Casey Cagle. There were actually three others that I was seriously considering, but I feel I was kind of looking long term and I would like to see him in office. I feel like he had more to say about children in foster care than a lot of the candidates, and that was just something I appreciated him taking a stand on, and he got my vote.
Supporting women's rights, I'd say more than anything. So two things, Planned Parenthood, women's rights, and NRA. I'm a registered Republican, but I'm opposed to much of what the Republicans are doing. For governor, one of the Democrats, I'm not even sure do I get in there. I flip a coin mostly.
Olivia, thank you so much for getting that sound for us today.
No problem.
So, Jim, let me start with you. There are some interesting kind of observations.
That was an incredible mix.
Yeah.
I like the guy who wants to support Planned Parenthood and the NRA.
Yes.
You don't see that often.
So we don't know.
Women packing heat.
Yeah, we don't. Tamar, we don't know. One of the people that Olivia talked to said he's worried about they're always raising taxes. What I found fascinating about that is, at least in his personal case, the Republicans have not done a good job getting out their message. Obviously, We had a tax cut in Washington, and the Georgia legislature passed a tax cut, which they're very proud of, too. Now, that's one voice, but it does sort of confirm that we think that maybe cutting taxes hasn't been the kind of issue that Republicans had hoped it would be.
And this is the number one issue that Republicans are going to run on this year. So clearly they have work to do to get that message out about why average Joes should care, why it does matter to them. Also, I was very struck by that quote at the end about flipping a coin. Mm-hmm. You know, these people have spent, I think it was something like $22-23 million on this race, getting the message out. That is not what you want to hear if you're any of these candidates.
Yeah, Ed?
Well, you know, the great irony when it comes to the amount of spending is that we're actually ranked, I believe, number 50 in the nation in terms of per capita spending by the state government. And so, you know, the folks who are worried about our spending levels, it is kind of ironic. But it is an issue, and it's an issue that several of the candidates on the Republican side are harping on, particularly those who are running as outsiders, which sort of gets back to the point of the turnout and what you were seeing at the polls today. I quite frankly think that a low turnout on the Republican side favors those who are running as outsiders versus those who are running as establishment candidates, because once you get down below 20%, you're talking about a lot of the activists who are out there looking for change.
You know, Michael, if we could identify, if Olivia had asked for names, and we could identify the man who told her that he cares about gun control but was voting for Hunter Hill, the Republican who has, along with most of the conservatives, you know, really been about gun rights, you could pick him off in the general.
Yeah, I've said before, I think that's an opportunity for Democrats that's going to continue to be there, whereas there's lots, I mentioned before about Democrats that own guns, right? And there's lots of Democrats that own guns, and I think as that shift starts to happen, you'll find that there are Democrats out there that may not be championing the NRA, or there may be Republicans that may not champion the NRA gun rights and their lack of movement, especially within Congress, on what they're willing to do about guns. But they believe in women's rights, as the gentleman said, right? And there's lots of other things that we could say, yeah, the Democratic Party is where you should be when you're based on these things. And I think we're going to start to see that shift overall.
Let me pose a question to both our Republican and Democrat in the House here. Okay, is in a low turnout situation, which dominates in y'all's party? Is it the activist or the older voter?
Okay, can I ask, let's talk about, that's a perfect question. Let's talk about it in terms of the governor's race particularly.
Absolutely,
okay, with you?
Sure, yeah.
Well, the answer is yes, because you're talking about the two groups that actually will show up in a low turnout are the older voter who votes every election. I mean, my mother is 92 years old. I better get this right. And she is voting today, and she has voted every election that I can imagine. And her group always does vote, and the activists always vote. So, you know, that's the great dichotomy that these candidates have to play with, is how are you going to appeal to those groups that actually are going to show up? And that gets back to the point that I was making a moment ago. I think that this generally favors the outsider versus the establishment candidate when it's a low turnout.
I think from a Democratic side, it's going to be very, very interesting. You know, the older vote is tried and true. You can count them, kind of as Ed said, year after year, you can count on them to vote. But not to diminish their importance, but their vote's going to be diluted a little bit more this year because you're going to have a lot more newer voters showing up. And I don't even mean through the primary, but through the general as well. So you're still going to have those tried and true voters those older voters are going to be there. But the newer voters, which we can say, you know, part of the activists, part of that blue wave that we talk about, those are going to be a lot more new voters that are going to come. Doesn't make them more important, but it does mean that those percentage numbers are going to shift a little bit.
But therein lies the question, though, whether or not they're actually going to show up or not, the newer voters. And there's a difference between the activists and the newer voters. The newer voters, at least in this primary, aren't showing up. Yeah. I don't think they're not showing up for either party. The question is, are they going to be here in November or not?
Tomorrow,
right now, we're just not seeing it.
I'm sorry, Ed. Let's talk about the Republican gubernatorial contest for a few minutes. You've been here, you came in late last week. You were here through the weekend, watched some campaigning. If turnout is, most of the polling, really all of it, shows Casey Cagle coming in first place, but apparently not having enough to cross the threshold to avoid a runoff. if turnout is really low, my wife says there were three people voting at 7:30 this morning in our precinct. That's not good. We've had other anecdotal information saying it's really low. Can a Casey Cagle, if the activist in the Republican Party, the Julianne Thompsons, who was here talking about this yesterday and saying the activists aren't going to vote for Casey Cagle, could he still win but have his numbers low enough that he could be challenged in a runoff? What's your take on that?
And I'm in D.C., so my take might be a little different from a Galloway or somebody who's down here. But Cagle has that name ID. He's been in the public eye, a statewide official for more than a decade, if I remember correctly. So perhaps a lot of those older voters might go for him. I don't think it will impact him as much, but perhaps lower turnout will have an impact on the race for second place. If there is going to be a runoff on July 24th, who's going to be able to challenge them? And all the polls we've seen have showed Hunter Hill and Brian Kemp kind of tangling for that second place. But perhaps that's where we see an impact.
Ed, you ran for Congress a few years back. Is there in a low turnout primary, is there a difference between rural and suburban or urban communities? Because one thing that I have noticed about Brian Kemp, Bill, in this race for governor is that he has really worked rural Georgia a good bit.
Rural voters tend to show up more than suburban and urban voters as a general rule when it comes to a low turnout. So that should actually sway some things as well, or sort of change some of the dynamics. I would disagree a little bit with what Tamar said a moment ago, is that I think the interesting thing about Casey is that January 1, he was at 35%, according to most of the polls. He or people supporting him have spent $5.5 million, several times what anybody else has spent. And yet he's still sitting there around 35%. I think a low turnout could actually see his numbers slightly go down. I think he's still going to comfortably be in first place. But I do think it'll have an impact on him this time, because it gets back to my point earlier. I think that when you have a low turnout, you start to have more and more people favoring the outsider, and that favors Brian and Hunter in particular. So I do think that it's going to have an impact a little bit, at least on Casey Cagle.
All right, so let's talk about what that means, Michael. If in fact Casey Cagle ends up in the low to mid 30s, does that suggest we're going to have a pretty hot runoff in the Republican on the Republican side, or what numbers do you figure, Jim?
Just talking with a few Cagle people here and there, I think their expectation is that Cagle comes in at high 30s, low 40s.
Well, if he does,
and if he does, then they'll be happy with that. They'll be comfortable.
Yeah.
If he starts, if you see him getting below 35% share, the share that Ed just mentioned, then I think you're going to see some worry among establishment Republicans, and that's when we might see what we were talking about yesterday, and that is a Nathan Deal getting involved in this contest.
The lines that I draw is over 40%. Casey should be sleeping very soundly tonight, because he will, in all likelihood, be the next nominee for the Republican Party. 35-40%. It's a race, but he's got the edge. If he gets in there below 35%, it's jump ball, start all over. There's no front runner.
Michael?
I think Ed's exactly right. I mean, but you keep talking about the outsider, and wondering why Clay Tippin's name isn't being mentioned there.
Well, yeah, just because he hasn't had the money to compete, quite frankly. He made a splash early on. He's a very qualified candidate. He's a very knowledgeable individual, but he just simply hasn't had the money to keep up. Yeah. And compete this year.
He had his get out the vote effort was a 24-hour Facebook session, which is cheap but exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And apparently he was still doing it this morning when we woke up, so he really committed to that.
Yeah, apparently he at some point went to the pool and swam some laps while he was, according to one of our producers here. By the way, Tom Faust, our producer, was up in East Cobb voting this morning at 9 a.m. There were three people in his polling place, which is in the 11th district. That's Loudermilk territory up that way. By the way, I should never forget this. You can watch us on Facebook Live right now. Just go to the GPB News page on Facebook, and we will be there. You will see this great, bright orange that Tamar Hallerman is wearing.
Not a cardboard cutout.
No, it's good. I like colors. It. And you can also, of course, while you're on Facebook Live, you can leave messages telling us what you're thinking about what we're talking about. So do that or tweet us at PoliticsGPB. One of the people who tweeted us is Kevin, who tweets it, KRP fan. Out of curiosity, I spoke with several young people at work. They didn't even know there is an election today. They're obviously not listening to Political Rewind.
They're not listening to Political Rewind. They're not watching their local news because it's actually, you know, that's, and we need to mention that. That's one of the interesting phenomenons I've seen this season, that not only are you seeing Republican commercials, but you're seeing Democratic 30-second spots for the first time in a primary that I can remember in a long time.
They got money to spend this time around. Olivia, you're a young person. Your friends, but where are this? Are they paying any attention?
You know, I'm glad you're asking because the answer is no. They do not know. I've talked about it with a few of them, and the response has been, "What? Who? I'm sorry." So there's a lot of catching up to do.
Michael, you got your work to do if you're going to get young people interested in the Cobb County Democratic Party, it sounds like.
Yeah, you know, it's one area actually that I've been kind of proud of over the last 18 months or so that I've been chair, is being able to bring in a lot of new people, or a lot of young people on top of new people. But when we say young, I mean, I'm talking about getting people below the age of 50, right?
That's young to me.
You know, so when
Michael,
you start,
that's just hurtful.
So when you start talking about young in this context, right, you start talking about going below 30 or below 35. And quite honestly, when you start getting into those numbers, you know, Jim, you talked watching even the news, and they're like, "Well, what's that?" You know.
Yeah.
So those sources of media really starts to get trimmed down. We have to have those sources, those media outlets that they are paying attention to. Actually, you know, those sources of media being talked about to them.
That's a really good point, because we've got in the Jolt this morning, we have an item just on how much each candidate spent on TV during this campaign in the gubernatorial race. And that, because that's what we have done for 20 or 30 years, and there's an FCC requirement that stations disclose that. But we don't have anything similar when it comes to internet spending.
Correct.
And so we don't know who's doing how much on the internet. I can
tell
you.
And two things, as a millennial, a ton of us don't even have TV. I only have Hulu and Netflix and Amazon, all of which are ad-free, so it's a lot harder to get to people like me. My second question is for Michael. I mean, there's been talk about this blue wave forever, for years now, and everybody thought after Trump's election, maybe this year would be the one that we'd see more energy. But based on at least what we've been hearing about the polls today, is that energy really materializing for the Democrats?
Well, I can tell you that throughout early voting, the Democratic vote was up about 10 points. So there was an upswing in Democratic vote. There was kind of this myth that was out there that the black vote was down, which wasn't necessarily true either. I think the black percentage of vote was down just because the white percentage of vote was up like 68% for Democratic voters. So there is an uptick, you know, and I've traveled to, you know, 10, 15, 20 different counties going to Democratic events. And I can tell you there's definitely more people engaged, more people involved. As much as the wave, we have two strong candidates running for governor, right? Which I think is driving that number up as well. But I have to hope and believe that there is a true wave that's going to come. And if we haven't seen it thus far, those incremental numbers will just continue to grow as you get towards November.
My question for you, Michael, is this: is that 10% up from the last election cycle? It sounds significant, except when you remember that there wasn't a contested primary last time. On the gubernatorial
side. You said Jason Carter and Jason Carter.
So 10% up, I'm a great believer that everyone should vote, so I'm glad to see more people voting, but 10% up when there is a hotly contested gubernatorial primary, I must admit, just as a good government guy, a little bit disappointed.
I got to get to a break in a sec, but I want to do a really quick question. And Ed, let me throw it to you as the Republican at the table right now. Hunter Hill, Brian Kemp, fighting for a second spot in the runoff. Has Brian Kemp's commercials, as controversial as they have been, given him the momentum he needs to move ahead and take the second spot in that race?
Yes, in all likelihood.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Let's get a break in. When we come back, let's talk about the Democratic gubernatorial contest, which, no matter which Stacey wins, is a historic, will be a historic moment in Georgia politics. We'll do that on this special edition of Political Rewind after the break.
Hey, this is David Green, host of Morning Edition. I'm here to talk with you about that poking feeling, the one that keeps reminding you to support public radio. You can support the programs you love by donating your used vehicle. That old car or truck could be worth hundreds of dollars to this station. All you have to do is call, and you might even receive a tax deduction.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR, and thanks.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. The Facebook viewers are chiming in, and I'm glad they are. Alan Williams says, I voted an hour ago in Snellville. I was the only person there the entire time. Angelin Hayes says, Clayton, Georgia, Rabun County, had a small but steady stream of voters when I voted this morning. And we've got a few others. Let's see if I can scroll down. We had a line at our polling place in Brunswick mid-morning. It was the first time since November 2016 election that we had to wait. That's a Mia Knight Nichols. That's interesting that down in Brunswick, she was in a polling place with a crowd. Jim Lloydmeyer says that he's watching from Greensboro, North Carolina, while he's waiting for a plane back to Atlanta. We appreciate your being there watching us. So, you know, we've had mixed results. I'm about to vote in Liberty County, says Clement Joel. Most of my coworkers did not even know it was election day. And then finally, we got a message, or one of the other messages we got was from someone asking us if we would make predictions before the end of the show. I think the answer to that is absolutely not. Not our job. Tomorrow, the Democratic race, you've seen it. You've been able to watch that race from Washington. It's gotten so much national attention. Stacey Abrams could become the first African-American female governor in the United States. But even if it's Evans who wins, we would have the first female nominee for governor from a major party.
Yeah, absolutely. I will say that in general, I hadn't seen a lot of other folks in Washington talking about this race until a few weeks ago. But Abrams has made constant trips up to D.C. to network with a lot of these big groups. And that's seemingly paid off for her. I was with her on Saturday. She had a rally at her campaign headquarters. She had the head of Emily's List, the head of the local chapter of Planned Parenthood, of NARAL. She had Valerie Jarrett, the former Obama administration advisor. She's managed to kind of pull together all the national Democratic groups. So if you talk to folks in Washington, they're all focused almost exclusively on Abrams.
Yeah, and that's got to be frustrating for Evans, who's got the support of really your kind of your home state Democrats who are used to kind of being at the control of things. So it's made them very uncomfortable. It's interesting. I mean, Evans has put in something like $1.3 million, a lot of it her own money, into TV time, whereas Abrams has only put in maybe 500,000, but she's gotten at least $1 million in support from three pretty powerful PACs that have jumped in on her side.
Yeah, Michael, we presume based on the polling, based on all sorts of momentum, based on the fact that yesterday Hillary Clinton endorsed her, and just a couple days before that, Bernie Sanders endorsed her, uniting two Democrats who were feuding for so long. Is Stacey Abrams going to be the nominee from? Well, we said no predictions. Let me ask it this way: do you believe that that her path to victory appears to be the right way to go in Democratic politics these days?
I think anytime you can run a grassroots effort across the entire state, the way that she has, when you can get the litany of nationally respected people that Tamar listed, plus Bernie Sanders and now Hillary Clinton, that's pretty substantial.
What does it say to us then about if she does become the nominee, about moving forward into the general?
Well, I mean, as you said before, regardless of whether Stacey Evans or Stacey Abrams win, I mean, it is a historic moment for all of us here in Georgia, and is particularly important for, I think, the Democratic Party and what we've been able to do to put women firmly at the helm and at the lead and encourage them to run and get out to actually win races. So I'm excited about this either way it goes, and I think that as a whole with the Democratic Party, we're really, really putting our foot forward with where we're going in this country.
But I will say that Abrams has taken the Georgia Democratic Party further to the left than it's usually gone.
Yeah, well,
and in that case, you have to wonder if there's a Republican runoff for governor, does that tempt Republicans to push their contest just a little bit further to the right?
Well, let's not act like that hasn't already happened, right? We've got chainsaws, bazookas, and things blowing up, right? So on the
Republican
side,
Casey Cagle has not run that kind of campaign, and he's likely to emerge as the nominee.
That is true, but then that will be Casey Cagle's job to kind of pull that back a bit, because when you have what Kemp has done, we have what Michael Williams has done with that disastrous bus. That does excite people, right? And just as far as and much further, I think that's moved people much further to the right. That's moved the Republican Party much further to the right than what Abrams has moved us to the left. But I think ultimately, whatever happens, there's going to be some movement back towards the middle. Obviously,
well, I don't think there's any question that Abrams is going to move the Democratic Party far to the left. I mean, she's running in my mind probably the most honest Democratic race that I've seen in the last 20 years, in which she's made a point of going, I'm a liberal Democrat, I'm a progressive Democrat, I'm going to stay a progressive Democrat, and I'm going to either win or lose as a progressive Democrat rather than trying to move to the middle. I do think that, you know, put aside Michael Williams, okay? He's, I'll say right now, I don't know if he's truly a nut, but he sure does act like one. But as for the rest of the candidates in the Republican field, I do think that given their past records, they can very easily move in the general election to the middle. And this is still a center-right state. And it's going to be seen, just to be seen, whether or not Abrams' theory of running is going to work out, in which she simply says, I'm going to run as a true progressive Democrat and see if I can activate my base enough to show up in November.
Jamar?
And that's a high-risk run.
Michael, I don't know if you've had a chance to look over the early voting numbers, but I'm wondering just how much Abrams' initiative to register a lot of minority voters, her new Georgia project, I'm wondering if that has paid off at all in the early vote.
I don't have any numbers to have that correlation together itself, but I know that in addition to the absentee ballots has been a big push, and I know that I think this year we have 52% more requested ballots, absentee ballots, than we did in 2014, and I think in 2016. And I think the Republicans are only up like 8% from that number. So there are some conservative efforts in some places, and we are definitely seeing the results from that. So I think we've seen the results for in-person early vote. We've also seen a big jump in the absentee ballot requests. So look, it's not one specific thing. So there was a lot of talk and a lot of effort put into voter registration, and there's still a lot of that going on now through both her organization and others. And I think that's actually contributing to it.
So let me start with you, Jim, but let anybody weigh in on this. Jim, who's the Doug Jones in the Democratic gubernatorial race? In other words, we know that Doug Jones won, as we saw the Virginia gubernatorial race go Democratic, because these candidates were able to activate previously people who either sat on the sidelines or were Republicans, or in addition, African-American women who turned out to the polls. But Doug Jones built his coalition without becoming a progressive Democrat in Alabama, and this is still Georgia.
Yeah, but I think the better question is, where is Roy Moore on the Republican side?
Yeah.
And,
okay.
Absent Michael Williams, I'm not seeing Roy Moore in the Republican field.
I get asked sometimes is, well, you know, is what happened in Alabama going to happen in Georgia? And my answer is simply this. Yeah, if my party nominates a pedophile, we may be in trouble. But short of that, I think we're in pretty good shape.
So you don't think that the Democrats found a path to victory in Alabama that can be emulated here? You think it was because they had an opponent who was easy to beat?
Well, Alabama was an anomaly, but that doesn't mean that there isn't a pathway to victory here in Georgia. Okay, and let me sort of say one thing real quick about Stacey Abrams, who I served with for 10 years. She's been out there. It's not just what she's doing now and the people that she's bringing in now, but she's been working that Democratic base for 10 years in terms of the Metro Atlanta, the DeKalb County. She's been at all those little meetings. And that's overall, that's how you win elections, is by what type of base you build up over a number of years. And Stacey Abrams has been out there, wherever two or more Democrats are congregated, she's been there talking to them. And so she's been building this army for quite some time.
Justin Williams tells us on Facebook Live, he doesn't say where he voted, but he says, I was the only person under 60 voting at 7:30. Oh, he does. He says, I'm 28. Victoria Ferguson Young says, I just went to vote in Southwest Atlanta, and it was quite busy. Jim, it's hard to predict where turnout, because this is going to be a low turnout primary, but you've got to think that Southwest would tend to be favorable for Stacey Abrams. And if there is a sizable turnout in precincts down there, it bodes well for her.
Right. I would think so. I'd also be watching maybe certain portions of DeKalb.
Yeah.
You do have to remember that Southwest Atlanta is also Vincent Fort territory, and he's out there
for Stacey Evans.
But I would think that the top tier candidate would be the more forceful.
So, Octopi Wall Street says, as a conservative transplant from Alabama, Ed, I throw this at you. I was looking forward to sane electoral choices. It feels like all the conservative choices are just using recycled Trump rhetoric. Sad, all caps. Your reaction?
Well, this is a Republican primary with a low turnout, so the folks are trying to appeal to the voters to the base. Let's see what happens once we get into the runoff and once we get into the general election.
And here's what's going to happen in the Republican Party. You want a prediction? The Republican Party continues to run to the right. That base will continue to get smaller and smaller and smaller till there's not enough base to win elections. If you look at what happened with Doug Jones, you're exactly right. No one wants a pedophile on any side of the aisle. But with Alabama and Mississippi being as conservative as they are, we're seeing a change with Republican value shift, I think. And I don't want to speak for the heart of the Republican Party, but I can speak for that gentleman there and other folks that's contacted me and the like. You have Casey Cagle. If he's going to be the middle-of-the-road guy, but he's going to talk the same Trump mantra, he's going to talk about MS-13, and he's going to champion RFRA bills. That are things that are completely going to run away from what the vast majority of Georgia voters are going to want.
Well, let me sort of say something, and here's a news flash. I agree with Michael on this one issue. No party in this state can win by simply moving far to either the right or the left. You've got to be either a center-right or a center-left party. And if you have candidates that are simply moving far to the right or far to the left, that candidate is going to be in trouble because you have to, and I'll tell you this, you have to govern from the middle. And most voters are somewhere in the middle. I think in Georgia, the majority are center-right. But if you see either party moving hard to one direction or another, that party is going to be in deep trouble. And that's why I think, quite frankly, Stacey Abrams, for all that she's doing in order to get the nomination, particularly when she starts trumpeting Bernie Sanders and folks like that, she's going to have a hard time coming back and getting that necessary support.
Tamar, it strikes me that Abrams, if she wins, could be in the position that Ossoff was in the special election, which is there are a lot of national Democrats who were really interested in helping him, but he wanted to keep him at arm's length because he knew it wasn't going to help his effort to win as a Democrat in the 6th District. It's conceivable that Abrams, given the Hillary Clinton, given the Bernie Sanders, will those people energize enough voters to compensate for the voters out there who are really put off by those national Democrats?
Certainly. I don't know how you get around that.
Yeah.
But, but to Ed's point, Nathan Deal has injected an interesting issue of governance into this campaign. And you're right, Ed, it's a challenge for Stacey Abrams, but it's a challenge for Republicans too. Because he is, we've got a glimpse of a Republican governor that Democrats can latch on to. And that's got to be tempting for some candidates.
Well, I agree with you in terms of you got to have someone who, with those basic capabilities to govern. And that's hard. I was there. I was there during the depths of the recession when we had to start making some very tough choices. When we went from a, $21.2 billion to a $17.4 billion budget, when we had to, quite frankly, make tough choices when it came to the Hope Scholarship in order to make it survive. One thing that irritates me a lot with the Democratic primary is that they seem to act as if Republicans wanted to cut Hope. Mm-hmm. Nobody wanted to cut Hope. We wanted to save Hope. And this governor, Governor Deal, stepped in and took the point saying, I may take some political arrows for this, but I'm going to make sure that Hope is there for the next generation. And he did pull together a coalition that included Stacey Abrams, that included Republicans across the board in order to do so. And that's what you've got to do during tough times. And that's what you've got to do as a good government. And what I've been saying for years is that you'd show me the party that in the long run is going to be focused more on what I call gateway issues. And gateway issues are issues in which you pull folks in that might not ordinarily be with you, but because of this issue, they'll give you another chance.
All right. I got to get to another break, but I really want to share with you all a tweet we got from a listener who's a pretty faithful listener to the show, Sam Burnham. He sent a photograph of his son, his oldest son, and the message is, took my future sailor son to vote for the first time today. I assume he's going into the Navy. He listened to yesterday's podcast to help make some final decisions, and we see his son standing with an I have voted peach sticker. So, Sam, thank you. We're proud. We're happy for you that you got your son out to the polls. Let's one last question for you, Tamar. How important, as you know, I've been getting called by national news organizations to talk about the governor's race, Democratic race particularly. You've been doing a lot of media, some of it about Washington, but I assume you've been asked about the governor's race. How important do you think this Democratic race is to the members up there that you watch on the Democratic side day in and day out? Are they seeing it as a possible sign of how they need to run for the fall?
I think they're paying close attention to see, you know, the margins coming off of today to see if this new pathway that Stacey Abrams is preaching, if it's at all viable. They've seen that this old pathway of trying to, you know, appeal to people in the middle, to independent voters, that hasn't worked in the last few weeks. And I think there's a lot of desire. I think a lot of Democrats in Washington are very encouraged by Abrams' platform, but I think a lot of people are skeptical about it too.
But okay. I don't think we're going to know about that.
Until
at least September.
Okay.
I mean, if we don't see some movement among voters by September, any measurable amount of new voters coming in, then I think we'll know.
Okay, let's get to a break. Perfect time for a break. I just spilled an entire cup of ice water all over my iPad and my lap, so I would like to take a break. As we do, DJ Jennings sent us a Facebook post saying, just voted in Tucker, a steady trickle of mostly older folks, but at least one millennial present. You're listening to Political Rewind.
The Next Fresh Air, a feminist journey through the science and culture of pregnancy. We talk with journalist and mother Angela Garbus. In her new book, she writes about the incomplete research into the effects of alcohol and antidepressants on the fetus, what the placenta does, what's really in breast milk, and the anatomy that makes childbirth so difficult and painful. Join us.
Fresh Air is this afternoon at 3 here on GPB.
We're back. Republican Ed Lindsay is talking across the table to Democrat Michael Owens, chair of the Cobb County Democratic.
In a very friendly, civilized manner.
Well, we try. We aim for friendly and civilized.
We can do that.
You know, we had a situation on the show the other day where we had one panelist who will remain nameless, who wasn't very friendly, made some kind of nasty comments about the other party. And I got all these tweets and emails. So we aim for cordiality, even as we disagree with one another. Tamar, 6th and 7th districts, we have people think possibly vulnerable incumbents. Rob Woodall in the 7th, Karen Handel maybe in the 6th. We have too many Democrats running in each of those races to expect someone to emerge as a clear winner tomorrow, right?
Yeah, the consensus I'm hearing from party types is they're expecting Democratic runoffs in both districts. You have four Democrats running in the sixth to for the chance to challenge Karen Handel. You have six Democrats, if I remember correctly, in the seventh, which is pretty darn amazing considering that I don't think there's been a Democratic primary in the seventh in at least 10 years. So there is a ton of energy, but there's a real question. All but one of these 10 candidates, they're all brand new to running for office. They've never done this before. They have no name ID. They're doing this for the first time. A lot of them aren't so polished. They're doing this, you know, it's all brand new. So I'm wondering if any one of these candidates can really... capture the imagination of voters.
But one thing we have to say, Michael, because you're up there, the sixth is, you've got a little piece of it over there. Do you have a piece of the seventh? No, that's over east from you.
Correct.
Is new candidates, yes, energized to some extent by their opposition to President Trump. So that's in the long run a good thing for Democrats, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, it is simply fantastic. The number one, the number of candidates that we have. But to Mark's point, I mean, some of them it runs the gamut of how polished some of them are. And I think all of them are out working incredibly hard. But when you have, you know, the four Democrats and the six, I think that gets obviously a lot of the hoopla because of the election last year, right, with John Ossoff in that race. But this is not a special election. So amongst the Democratic Party, a lot of people that are the new folks that came in and energized are finally actually getting a taste of seeing what a full primary looks like when they really have a choice of candidates. And John Ossoff is not on the ballot. So, all those candidates pretty much started new. For a long time, it was just a two-person race with Bobby Capel and Kevin Abel. And then, qualifying came. We got two new candidates. You got the policy expert in Stephen Knight Griffin, and then the, I guess, more nationally known candidate in Lucy McBeth. And that really changed, I think, the dynamic of that race, because early on, I think a lot of voters were really hesitant to even choose any candidate because there was still this lingering that John Ossoff might get back in the election. So I think with that going so long into the season, voters really didn't start to crystallize around any of these candidates. And then qualifying comes, you got two more candidates. So I think it's still really wide open. I think there's a couple of candidates that may be drifting towards the top, but the six is still really a wide open election.
You know, one thing on the six to watch tonight is you've got a number of Democratic on the Democratic ticket. You've got a number of ballot questions.
Yes.
And one of the big ballot questions is on the topic of bump stocks. So I would like to see how that plays and how Lucy McBeth does. This is a mom, former Delta stewardess who lost her son to gun violence down in Florida a few years back.
And she's made that the entire centerpiece of her campaign, telling her story. She went to the March on Washington in March to protest gun violence. So that is absolutely her issue. The one thing that strikes me about both the sixth and the seventh, these Democratic races, is normally you talk to folks, to party folks like you, Michael, before the election, and generally people have an idea who's going to make it into these runoffs, who's going to win. But these contests are just so wide open. There are just so many candidates. They're so new. A lot of the fundraising has been kind of muted. Mm-hmm. Polling has been really scant, so we really don't have any idea what's going to be happening in a lot of these races.
Yeah, I mean, really a lot of all we have is just to see kind of the amount of work that the different campaigns are doing in the district. I mean, you have, like, to talk about the seventh a little, you have, you know, certain candidates who just hasn't, I don't think, raised a dime, and then you have other candidates that have poured in a lot of their own money. So really the only way to kind of judge any of this is how much are you seeing them active? What kind of field program are they putting together to actually go out and knock on doors?
Yeah, that gets to the question I was going to ask, and thank you for raising it, Michael, is who has the field campaign? Because I will say this as someone who's been a candidate. You show me the candidate who has the best field campaign versus a candidate who's written a personal check, I'll vote for the guy or the gal who has the best field campaign. So in the sixth, for instance, or the seventh, who has, I'm not asking for prediction, but who has the better, or who has solid ground campaigns?
Everyone's just going to look at me now.
Yeah.
I think in the seventh, I have probably seen Ethan Pham out a lot with a lot of folks out in the field. And
this is a first generation immigrant from Vietnam who's a lawyer who was not politically involved before Trump got elected.
Not politically involved, but very community involved. And I think you've seen some of that kind of translate over into his campaign. And up there in the seventh, you're also talking about, especially from a Democratic side, you're talking about a lot of people of color, different diversity. I mean, it's huge throughout Gwinnett County, obviously, which makes up a lot of the district. And then you have someone like David Kim, who is Korean, I think, who's also been very active. I think he's probably been able to fund a lot of his campaign. So those would probably be the two campaigns I could say that I've seen the most activity on.
But Carolyn Bordeaux, who is the Georgia State professor, has been getting a lot of talk. I'm not quite clear. I don't know if either you, Tamar, or you, Michael, are on how she managed to get to the top in terms of the conversation. She's smart. We know that.
Yeah.
She's fundraised amazingly well. She's outraised even Rob Woodall consistently.
That's exactly right.
Yep. A lot of it from out of state, though. She has gotten some help from Act Blue, which is a fundraising kind of bundling group that helped John Ossoff. I believe you can, anywhere in the country, you can donate amounts as small as like $1 or $5, and she somehow got on a part of that group. But she also has the backing of really powerful left-leaning organizations like Emily's List, helps too.
Getting back to my point, and it's interesting what Michael was saying, is that the folks who have the best ground campaign, a lot of times it's ground campaign that have nothing to do with a political party. The first time I ran, a lot of my folks liked me and were with me because I had coached basketball. I was active in my church. I was active in various civic groups, and they didn't know if I was Republican or Democrat. They just liked me because of being active in the community. So, with these first time folks, I kind of want to see how active they are in the community as much as how much money they've raised from out of state.
With the remaining time we have, by the way, Adrienne Wood just tweeted, just voted in East Macon. There was a small crowd. I had to wait about 5 minutes. It was young, old, black, and white. Thank you for reporting back to us, Adrienne. Okay, I just want to take host privilege to talk about a couple races that I think we're kind of interested in here. I can't wait to see how the Republican primary contest between Betty Price, State Representative Betty Price, and former Roswell Mayor Jerry Wood, who had to give up the job as Roswell Mayor, in part because Betty Price worked against him in the legislature to pass a bill that stopped him from running again. That's going to be fun to watch tonight, Ed.
Now, you talk about two people who probably in that district have a 99.9% name ID.
Everybody knows them.
Everybody knows them by their first name in that community. So it'll be interesting to see.
Jim, and of course, Betty Price is of interest to a lot of us because she is so controversial and doesn't mind being controversial at all.
No. She eats that stuff up, and it's fine. I will tell you what the big issue there is probably transportation. And whether Jerry Wood's efforts to really talk that up make a dent against a this is her third term she'd be running
third
for
term.
Third term incumbent.
Yeah, but you're talking about somebody who's been in office on Jerry's side for 20 years.
Right.
Yeah. So
all right, we'll watch. It'll be fun. The other thing, a couple of other interesting things. Steve Henson, the minority leader in the state, Democratic leader, of course, in the state Senate, has drawn opposition from the dancing preacher, McKenzie. I apologize. I don't off the top of my head remember.
Sabrina, maybe?
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's Sabrina McKenzie. She is, Jim, the dancing preacher.
I don't know that that's going to go very far.
Okay, so
you've also got David Ralston up in Blue Ridge with primary opposition, and I don't think that's going to go anywhere either.
Okay, the other one that we're going to watch, and Ed, I go back to you as a Republican, is Governor and Speaker Ralston were up in the North Georgia Mountains to campaign against a Republican incumbent, known as Dr. No, Representative Matt Gutler, because he votes against everything.
Yeah, Matt, I don't think Matt knows where that green button is in the House. He just keeps hitting the red button. I will say one thing real quick about that area. Steve Allison was a close friend of mine. He preceded Matt in the House. And when Matt got down, he and I were texting back and forth about the guy who succeeded him. He said, "Edward, up here, I'm considered a moderate." And if you knew Steve Allison, he was a very conservative guy because Steve actually could find the green button occasionally.
All right. So those will be fun little races. Anything on your radar that I,
Well, the PSC races, yeah. Of course, mm-hmm. Both sides. You've got Tricia Pridemore running against Jerry Hitchens in the primary. That's on the Republican side. You've got Doug Stoner in one race, and Lindy Miller and John Knoll in another one.
And the issue is going to be Plant
and Vogel.
Yeah, that's going to be a very volatile race in November for both of those seats.
You know, I one thing I'm going to be looking at is the number of women candidates that we have on the ballot, and if that's going to make a difference. You know, particularly just within Cobb County, to go from 4 years ago to today, we went from 19 women candidates to 31 women candidates. And the Republican Party has seen an uptick, I think, one candidate, nonpartisans, maybe three or four. So from a Democratic side, we have a lot more women running. I think a lot more women being energized. But I'm looking, the PSC race you just talked about, both of them has one man and a woman running as well. So I'm going to be looking across these races to see if that woman, the female vote, really starts to shine through.
And talking to a Democratic person I know up in Washington, their assessment of all these primary races across the country, in Democratic races at least, is when people don't know who they're going to vote for in some of these races, they go in and they pick the woman.
They pick the woman.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if that carries today.
And that's what I want to see, if that kind of holds true.
And we have that going on in Senate District 6 today, as a matter of fact, in a race between John Gordon and Leah Aldridge. With a lot of folks thinking that if Leah gets the nomination, Leah will be the much tougher candidate in the general election, which would be an interesting race.
She'd be facing
Jen Jordan, and that'll be an interesting race.
All right, we are completely out of time for today's show. Just long enough for me to say, Tamara, it's so much fun to have you in the studio instead of just hearing your voice from the Cox Bureau. Thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll have you back in the Cox Bureau, I hope, in the near future. Ed Lindsay, good luck with your Republicans tonight, Michael Owens. The same thing to you for your Democratic candidates
up
there. By the way, we've gotten a note from a friend of Michael Owens who wanted to let us know on Facebook Live that she really likes the T-shirt he is wearing. We'd tell you about it, but it's for a candidate who's on the ballot, and we're not going to do that. And it's a candidate who Michael knows quite well. And we'll talk about it. We'll tell people tomorrow, Michael. How's that?
Okay, that's fine.
Jim Galloway, thank you for spending an extra day with us on Election Day.
Well, get some coffee because it's going to be a late night.
It is going to be a late night. And by the way, if you're going to watch Return, you know, local TV will have a, you know, crawl underneath. They won't do much live break-ins for local races and statewide races like this. But GPB News will be active. Tom Faust, Olivia Rheingold, our social media team will all be here monitoring the elections. And if you keep looking at what GPB News, Tom, you'll see things as they come in. I'm Bill Nigut. We're back tomorrow, and we will have another great panel. Eric Tannenblatt will be here. Andre Gillespie will be here. And Teresa Tomlinson, the mayor of Columbus, will be here to give us their feedback on what happened tonight. I'll see you all again tomorrow at 2 o'clock. And Greg Bluestein, too, will be here with me. Bye.